knowing.
All right, man. Welcome to Crow 777 Radio. This is the first hour of episode 602. It's me and Jason today, and we're going to be covering the film called Revolver from 2005. Before we get started, I want to mention that we finally have the solar images people have been requesting for sale. Initially, we were going to do prints, but as we looked around, we realized there are so many print options that we finally decided we're going to do a digital download, and that is now available on the site under the link in the top navigation called Sun Image. If you hover over it, there's two choices: for a bundle or for a single. A single means you can just purchase one. A bundle lets you group, I think one of them is three and one of them is six, and you save a few shekels if you do it that way. I have put the images in PDFs, so it's all locked together. There is a 25-pixel border around for the printer. While people can print these for themselves, what I envisioned was that they would take the file to a printer. The reason is I made these things gigantor. You could print them in feet or inches, depending on what you want. And if you go to a professional printer, they can do whatever they want. Do you want to add anything in here, Jason?
So if you don't want to print these out yourself, there are several places that we've found that you can do it. There's FractureMe.com, Frameology, MixedTiles.com, and EasyCanvasPrints.com. Any of them should be able to suit your needs. You could probably even do it at home if you have a really good printer, but doing a proper printing slash framing place will probably be really, really nice in comparison to trying to do it yourself.
Yeah, they can actually put high gloss, and good thing you mentioned that, because I'm also going to make a gallery. So if people buy these, print them, and hang them up in their homes, if they take a picture of it or them or their family with it, I'll put these up on a gallery that I'm creating on the website. And by the way, if anyone does the glass print and they backlight it, I'd really, really like to see that because I didn't even know that was an option. But apparently you can get it printed on glass now and you could backlight it. But I think that's it, Jason. Shall we move along here?
Backlight would look amazing. We haven't done that yet, so I'm very curious if anyone does that.
Yeah, it would be cool. As a matter of fact, if I knew more about it, I could probably make the prints and skew them in a way that I produce them to backlight better. But I think it would be amazing, particularly for the prominent shots. But there it is. Hit the website. Click on the Sun Images link. You can choose a single or a bundle. And again, if you hang these in your home and you've done a nice print, take a picture. Take a picture with your dog or your family and send them to us. Rose will collect them, and I'm going to make a gallery on the website. There it is, man. Let's jump in, Jason. The message here is top shelf. I guess I can't say the movie is. The first time you watch it, I mean, Rose and I were just talking about this. The violence is overwhelming, and you think, I'm out. It's too violent. But the irony here is the violence is actually a character, for lack of a better description. I'm not trying to say that makes it okay. I'm really not down with violence in any form. But weirdly enough, in this movie, the violence is a character. It's playing an outcome that is put in motion for the main idea of the movie. Anyhow, welcome, Jason. Are you ready to tackle Revolver?
Yeah, it's a lovely day here, so let's get into this.
All right, so there's a little bit of a setup here, I guess. I'll say a couple things. If you take your time to figure out every name, meaning, and this color is symbolizing that and all this, just do it for entertainment if you're into that kind of thing. It's not going to do a damn thing to get you to the message of the movie, which is a critical message. And it's ironic that such a gold standard message, to make the pun, which you'll get in a minute, is buried in a movie of this type. And everything was done to give it bad reviews. It was edited together to make it confusing. Even the release is unusual, the release dates. And when you try to look up the release dates, you find a couple different stories. But the basic information about movies, like release dates and run times, just these basic things, out of the door, out of the gate, will give you an information about how important it is to, just let me say, world events or the, you know, the reason movies exist. So originally, this thing is released on 9/11. in 2005. So that tells you something out of the gate. But weirdly enough, if you dig, it was apparently then released on 922 and then on 928. And what's funny about that is the space between those dates would be a 6 and 11, which is the Marty McFly encoding of the 9/11 idea. And the runtime is 110 minutes, but even that's not totally true because they took so much effort to cut this apart and make it confusing and not allow it to be observed for the reason that it exists, which is a critically important reason. They've released different versions to different regions. And when they recut it and re-released it, get this, it was released on December 7th. I kid you not. So Pearl Harbor, which is, you know, the mother and father, maybe 9/11 is the cousin of Pearl Harbor. Same thing going on in a different time at a different size. But in doing that, it is very difficult to even get the DVD you want because based on the region you're in, you'd have to work at it. But the recut, they claim, was the first one was so confusing, we cut it back apart to make it easier to follow, which is untrue. It actually obscures it more from my point of view. But anyhow, Jason, is there anything you want to add before we take this apart?
I would suggest watching this movie before listening to this episode. If it's something you've ever wanted to see, if you like these kinds of things, obviously watch it first because this is just going to be such a detailed breakdown of the movie that it will be a huge spoiler.
Yeah, I guess I'm kind of with you. Depending on how you like to see movies, this would be a spoiler if you want to go see it. But to be fair, I don't think I've talked to anybody who isn't confused after the first watch. And everybody, the first time I mentioned this, I got so many contacts with one question: who is Mr. Gold? Well, we're going to answer that outright. But anyhow, I put together a little intro. I had kind of short notice, but I'm going to try to frame this up so the basic idea buried under all the violence and everything else is accessible to people if they were raised Christian or maybe they're in an Eastern part of the world. The idea here is universal. It is in every major spiritual tradition from Buddhism to Hebrew mysticism, Kabbalah, which is what most of this movie is drawing from. They're using that brand to deliver the idea, and lastly, to Christian mysticism. The main tenet of what's being shown here has been hidden, ignored, obfuscated, or outright lied about by most of the Western corporate religions. Anyhow, go ahead and do the intro and we'll jump in, Jason.
One day, millennia ago, a heavenly being was observing the goings on Earth. The being was tasked with watching over and recording mankind. He observed a very old yogi on a high mountain peak that he had seen many times before. The old man was 150 years old and had been meditating on the mountaintop at the mouth of a cave for many years. The old yogi was observing a young man climbing up the mountain in his direction, but the old yogi knew why he was coming. The young man was seeking the wise old yogi to ask a question. The young man reached the cave and sat down next to the yogi. He then asked, "What will happen after I die?" The yogi replied, "That is not important. Have you another question to ask of me?" Again, the young man persisted, inquiring about what would happen after death. Again, the yogi said that that is not important and added that if he did not have a question worth answering, that he should head back down the mountain. The young man then asked, "If that is not important, then what is?" The old yogi smiled and said, "I am happy that you have asked a question worth answering." He then added, "What is of paramount importance is how you live your life before you die, for that will determine the quality and context of your future path, which does not currently exist. That path could be paved with happiness and gold, or it could be strewn with stones and thorns. The life you are living now is the blueprint for the road that you have not yet built." The young man stood preparing to leave and then turned to ask the yogi one last question. The young man said to the yogi, "I intend to build a joyful road paved with gold, free of stones and thorns." He then asked, Is there really a devil in this world that can bring ruin to my plan? The yogi said, in meditation, I have searched this entire realm to discover if there exists a devil here. I have met heavenly beings and asked them if there is an earthbound devil. I have found no devil, and every time I have asked spiritually lofty beings, I have been told there is no earthbound devil. The old yogi added, when the earth was being created, no devil was needed or created. Unfortunately, mankind has insisted on a devil. So guard your plan of building a happy road very well, young man, because the other is testing us all and is here based on our insistence. The young man smiled and started off to head down the mountain and noticed that a song he had not heard in some time was playing in his head as he thought to himself, that old yogi is crazy. I do not know why I even bothered to hike up here. As he turned to wave goodbye to the old yogi, he stepped painfully on a thorn and cursed his misfortune. The old yogi smiled and turned away, free of the misfortune he once had to contend with.
And there's my effort at queuing up why this movie matters. And again, it's violent. So if you're not into violent movies, you may have to weigh that. But I will say, most of the time, violence in movie is there for its shock value and everything else. And while that is, of course, true of this movie, the violence also plays a role. And, you know, it's up to anybody to decide what's too much or too little. For me, any is too much. But it does show the cause of the main subject. With that, Jason, let's jump in.
Revolver is a 2005 action thriller film co-written and directed by Guy Ritchie and starring Jason Statham, Ray Liotta, Vincent Pastore, and Andre Benjamin. Revolver centers on a revenge-seeking con man whose weapon is a universal formula that guarantees victory to whoever uses it when it is applied to any game or confidence trick. Revolver is the fourth feature film by Guy Ritchie, with this being his third to center on crime and professional criminals, along with plenty of violence, but it also has a strong philosophy woven through it that has Buddhist moral content. Interestingly, the film performed rather poorly at the box office, along with receiving negative reviews. There are actually three versions of the film that would end up being released. The director's cut is considered by Guy Ritchie to be the definitive version of the story. As the main character, Mr. Jake Green, says in the film, the only way to get smarter is by playing a smarter opponent.
First out of the gate, I think it should be clear whoever actually wrote this, regardless of who it's credited for having written it, is initiated. They have to be. And while it does have some Buddhist elements, I think I would prefer to state that most of it, or the dead center matchup, is on Jewish mysticism from the Kabbalah. But this is where people always lose their minds. The Kabbalah has a mysticism in these things that have been done since the recesses of time, but so does Buddhism, but so does any other, even Christianity, Christian mysticism. They all have it. It's just different words with a different flavor, with a different culture delivering. And what we need to keep in our minds is nature is the gold standard for truth. There is no other standard. And so it's not like one culture made up its own truth and another one did another. You're either right or you're wrong, and that is dictated and proven by nature. And so what I'm trying to get at here is each of the cultures in this world have made a road that looks different, but they all go to the same destination per se. Anyhow, go ahead.
The film opens with Jake Green being released from prison. The interior of the prison is always shown as being incredibly bright white, both with the way it is painted as well as incredibly bright white fluorescent lighting. It's raining as Jake Green leaves the prison after being locked up for 7 years. His inner monologue says, one thing I've learned in the last 7 years, in every game and con, there is always an opponent and there is always a victim. The trick is to know when you are the latter so you can become the former. Throughout the movie, there will be continual references to games of chess.
So even though this is all worked around a spiritual idea from Lord knows how long ago, they're putting a binary choice here. You can either be the victim or you can be the guy causing someone to be a victim. And that's a poor idea to put forward as your only choices. In the situation of a game or a con, that's absolutely true. But the idea of altruism or anything else is out of the entire telling of this. And so before we get in here, I'll just get this out of the way. The film has many references, encodes, and meanings in Kabbalah, numerology, and symbols. As an example, the three main characters, Zach, Jake, and Avi, form a trinity, referencing the idea of the three pillars from Kabbalah being right, center, and left energies. The name of each character has multiple meanings from the Hebrew to the English. Jake's last name, Grim, references, among other things, the Sephiroth called Netzach, which is typically the color green, typically translated to victory or endurance. You can find other meanings, of course. But this in turn can be followed to archangels and meanings like the planet Venus and so on and so forth. Now, if you spend your time tracking all this down, you can be entertained. You might learn some occult information, but it does nothing other than confuse the main message of the film for most people. Also, the number 32 shows up a lot of times to include the floors in the elevator, when Jake wins the very important battle. A chessboard employs 32 pieces on the tessellated board, which mimics, I think, originally Solomon's temple. But anyhow, there's all that, Jason.
We cut to the casino that is owned by the primary antagonist, Dorothy Mecca, standing with his main henchman, Paul. Next, Jake is driving with his brother and two other men as they discuss him going to Mecca's casino, with Jake claiming that he owes both of them. Apparently, Jake has been expected, as upon entering, the front door bellman calls to security to report of Jake's presence. Once they get to a table, casino goons tell the group that all the tables are closed. However, after Mecca hears of this from Paul, Mecca wants Jake brought up to him.
The other thing we should mention is people are going to argue about whether the whole thing's a dream or not. Doesn't matter. And you will find, if you try to logically work out parts of it, that it couldn't possibly be an allegorical story to a real world, though parts of it can. But here in the scene, as he heads to the casino, right out of the gate, the problem that we are all facing is causing everything that's happened. Jake's brother tells him, "Hey, dude, you got more money than you could spend if you tried. Why are we doing this?" And Jake says, "This guy owes me," and he doesn't even know what he is owed. He wants Mecca to pay something. And at this point, you have no idea why. In one of the edited versions, it's less clear why. Even in the full-blown version, the description is, I think it's one scene, isn't it, Jason, where they finally tell you why?
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah, it's just like one scene. Anyhow, let's keep going. Let's get into it.
Jake tells his brother that they will take the stairs to the 20th floor where Mecca is because he doesn't like to feel trapped. However, he reluctantly gets in the elevator. Only Jake is allowed to sit at the games table with Mecca after Mecca dismisses one of the other players to make room for him. After some banter in which it is revealed that Jake used to work for Mecca, Jake sets Mecca up by losing a rather hefty bet on a casino chip toss with one of the other players. He gets Mecca to toss for all the money he has there with him. Mecca loses the toss. Jake then gets him to agree to double or quit as an act of charity. Jake wins again. As the winnings are collected, Paul encourages Jake to come back to the table, but they take their money, clearly a substantial amount, and leave. On their way out, a large thug-looking man, whose name we will later find out is Zach, stops Jake and says that he's in trouble and that they can help, handing him a business card. This time, Jake takes the stairs. Once inside, Jake collapses, falling down the stairs to the next landing. The card is shown on the ground, where it reads, "Take the elevator."
All right, so I'll try to break this down as we go in. Basically, you're going to be introduced to the trinity, the three main characters, which are Jake, the guy who was released from prison, and two other guys, Avi and Zach. Now, Avi and Zach know everything. And the reason they know everything is because they are in control of their own selves, of their own minds. The elevator scene is highly symbolic and plays a key role in the film. First off, you should know that Jake has a terrible fear of tight places, which is a bit ironic because he told you, I was given a choice when I went to prison. I could do general population for 14 years or go in a tight little room for 7. So basically, I guess that's where the fear of tight places is coming from. But the reason he is afraid of tight places is because of his ego. There are 3 main elevator scenes that make key points in this film. And everyone should know from here forward, the elevator stands for, lack of a better term, the devil. This was used in the TV show Big Bang as one example, and in Prince's breakout album Purple Rain, I think from 1984. What's the song? Don't let the elevator get you down, go crazy. Where does Prince reportedly die? In an elevator. In the lyric, he makes it stand out by calling the elevator the D elevator. From Prince, so that you know good and well that he's pointing to something there. He's supposed to have died in an elevator, but he told us in that very same album in 1984 that he was gonna, because he wrote a song on the same album that he talked about the elevator in a song called I Would Die For You, the 4 being written numerically and the U the single letter. Now, the reason I'm going through all of this is because I think, I'm not sure about this, but I think later Prince accurately told someone that the elevator was the devil. Now, there are reasons for this that I'm just not going to get into right now because it's kind of involved. But from now on, when you see films which are used to socially engineer us all and you see elevators, consider how and why it's being used. At the base of it, the simplest kind of idea that maybe I can get into here without getting off track is a human being wants to get up to, say, the 20th floor of a building that he built, but he doesn't want to have to expend all this energy to go up 20 floors. God gave us the legs to do it, but we're not happy with that. So what do? We use our genius to make gadgets and contraptions so that we don't have to walk up 20 floors and we can be elevated artificially without our own power, just using our cleverness. And most people will say, what the hell are you talking about? But maybe that's the most basic way that I can describe the elevator. And lastly, you know, if I was making a film, the elevator would not mean that for me. And yet I'm forced to comprehend that it is used that way in the occult programming of film, or however that's properly put together. I should also add that during the coin flip, he's also using another trick out of Prince's book. When he does the initial flip to lose to bait Maka, when he wins, he calls the color purple, which is mastery and duality, or both feminine and masculine put together. So there's that kind of thing going on here too. But again, not really important.
Maka and Paul are discussing what just occurred. Maka is, of course, quite upset about losing so much money and tells Paul to have his professional hitmen get rid of Jake. Cut to Jake at the hospital, but they currently don't have any answers for him. They'll call him with the test results. Jake is driven to where he is staying with his brother's henchmen. When he walks up to the door, Jake sees another card on the ground that reads, "Pick this up." As Jake bends down to do so, gunfire opens up on the group with one of the henchmen going down. Gunfire is exchanged with losses on both sides. Jake is alone after all of his side are killed when Zach pulls up, blazing a machine gun at the other group. He tells Jake to get in the car, which Jake reluctantly does. They speed out of there. Cut to Maka in his UV room, being told by Paul that his main assassin, a man known as Sorter, missed Jake. Sorter apparently never misses. Cut to Sorter driving away with another henchman, being quite irate at the driver, who points out how he never misses.
The Mystical Three comes up as it does in so many scenes because Sorter missed 3 times and they keep saying it. Here's where you can easily be led astray in a scene like this, because you're going to be saying, how in the heck did Zach know? How come he can walk into a gunfight and not get shot? How is it possible that he could have premeditated the exact moment that Jake would see the card, bend down to pick it up, and avoid getting shot? These are all confusion tactics, and nonetheless, they're telling the story. Because Zach, in truth, does know everything. You know who else knows everything? Mr. Gold knows everything. Mr. Gold sees everything. But Zach and Avi are immune to Mr. Gold. And just to put the spoiler, and what I'm about to say is an absolute spoiler up front, what's going on here is Zach and Avi are trying to take Jake with them to get him out of the game that everyone else is playing.
Jake and Zach pull up in front of a building that looks like a former theater called Paramount City, but has a smaller sign below it that reads Sticks and Balls Pool House. Once inside, Jake is introduced in passing to a woman named Doreen. They continue through the building to the back, and we are now introduced to Avi. Zach and Avi never refer to Jake by his first name. They only ever call him Mr. Green. Avi is sitting in front of a chess set, and Jake is invited to sit down. Avi tells Jake that he gathers that he is quite the player. While Avi attempts to engage Jake in a game, Jake cuts him off to ask what's going on. Avi has his medical results from the hospital. No reason is given as to why he has the records, and Avi says it's not important how he acquired them. Jake is informed that he will die within 3 days from a very unpleasant ailment. Jake wants to leave, but Avi asks him for 30 seconds. Jake is informed that they have already saved his life once for free, and the next time, it will not be so. There are two conditions, which are non-negotiable. Jake thinks about how he is being grifted. Zach tells Jake that the first condition is that they will bleed him dry, that he will give them every penny that he has. Zach also tells him that it is natural that he thinks that this is a con. The second condition is that he will do everything that they tell him to without argument. This includes answering any questions that are asked. Avi tells him that he doesn't have a lot of time, and in fact, he doesn't actually have any other choice. Jake is given 3 hours to decide. Jake gets up and leaves.
3-3-3-3-3-3-3. A lot of threes through this whole thing. The Trinity, why? I've explained it before. Because nature proves beyond the shadow of doubt or questionability that three is critically important. That's why we have ideas like 33 and these other things. Why? I'll give you a brief overview why three just at the basic level is important. Because for creation to happen, you've got to have three. I want to make more human beings. What do I need? One, mom. Two, dad. Guess what? Three, there's your creation. Wait a minute. I want to design something. I sit down. I draw a line. Can't draw anything. Can't make anything. Can't create. Draw another line. Well, I've got two lines. Lo and behold, the magic third line comes to a triangle. Now I can create things. That's just a very basic overview. In the beginning here, as Jake sits down meeting Avi, Avi tries to pull him in a game and Jake's not having any of it. The irony here is Jake's already in the game. Doesn't matter whether he wants to play chess or not. Here's where people get led astray. Avi says, don't ask us how we got the hospital records. And that's exactly what everyone watching this is going to do. How in the hell could they pop? It doesn't matter. What matters is the information coming across. And by the way, another three when he says, give me 30 seconds. Well, take the zero away. There's another three. And here is one thing that we should all appreciate. Zach tells Jake that the first condition is they will bleed him dry. Are you familiar with media always pre-echoing what they're about to do, pre-announcing? Well, here's an example of that.
At the hospital, a medical attendant is holding a folder and tells Jake that she doesn't have good news. Cut to Jake thinking to himself while staring in a mirror. Jake thinks that the doctor must also be in on it, so he wants to speak with someone who he thinks that they couldn't have gotten to. Cut to another doctor's office, where he tells Jake that he has a rare blood disease. Jake thinks that he also must be in on it and stands up, drawing his gun and pointing it at the doctor. He is accusing the doctor of being paid to tell him about the blood disease, but the doctor is very scared and denies it. Jake accepts that it must be true. Cut to a bank vault with Jake taking all of his money out of a safety deposit box.
So while this scene is giving you key information of why Jake's going to do what he does, he's just had two doctors say, you're going to die. When? Well, magically in 3 days. 3-3-3-3-3. But here's the point. It's all incongruent. You can't look at what's going on. And this is where people get confused. And the movie is intentionally confusing from my point of view. What goes on with this doctor couldn't happen. There's no way to logically put together how any of it happened. By the way, he puts a gun in this guy's face. And a few scenes later, he's going to be back in that office and the doctor's going to be acting like nothing ever happened. So basically, the storyline is all that matters. Wasting time trying to put it together is just confusing, and I think intentionally so.
Sorter is speaking to Macca, uncomfortably telling him that he made a mistake. Macca finds this hard to believe, as Sorter never misses. 3 times, no less. The number 3 keeps coming up. Sorter seems unsure of what to say to Macca, and he mumbles out that he had a bad feeling. Macca doesn't like this, and tells him that he doesn't pay him to have feelings. Sorter is the best, and he questions why he would allow feelings to confuse the relationship. Macca wants Sorter to finish the job since there is some urgency in the matter.
So as Jason mentioned, the number 3 again, I mean, it's almost nonstop, the importance of the 3 idea. But basically, here's another example of a name. What does Sorter do? Well, he's the best hitman on the planet. He sorts people out. So he literally is a sorter. But under it all, he's asked, why did you miss? And people are still trying to figure out how Zach's card could have been placed and timed. And they're getting confused by all that, which is its intention. But Sorter tells him, I had a bad feeling. And the reason is because Sorter is a pawn. He is not in control of his own game. He is, what was the rule? You got to determine who's in control and who's the victim and who's not. And the whole thing is not to become the victim. Well, even though Sorter's out there whacking people or trying to whack people, he is, in fact, the victim to the game. He is not in control. And that is not unique to Sorter. That is every other human being in the story, with the exception of, I believe, Doreen. I guess I'm not 100% sure, but I'm pretty sure Doreen, Zach, and Avi.
Jake returns to the pool hall with his money. Avi pulls a stack out, commenting on how they are new bills, which are not very common in that town. They are also printed to be $12 bills. Zach tells him that his work starts now and that he will be driving as keys are tossed to him. The keychain has a chess fob on it with a 4x4 chessboard on it and some pieces. In the top left corner is a white rook. One space to the right is the black king, below which are a black pawn and a white pawn. Cut to Jake driving, and Avi is in the back seat speaking to him, informing him that they are loan sharks. He says people hate and fear them, just like he will come to do so. Jake is told that it is his money that they will be loaning. They arrive at an office building during a thunderstorm. Inside, an older man named Horowitz is saying that he has nothing left, which is why he needs the loan. Jake is seen thinking deeply, and Avi snaps his fingers at him. This annoys Jake greatly. While Avi asks the man if he knows their rates and policies, he says that he knows of their reputation and that he is only speaking to them because he has no choice. Avi nods to Zach. Zach nods to Jake. Jake is not happy about it, but he bends down and grabs the bag of money and puts it on the desk in front of the man. Avi looks at him like he's now in the way and waves Jake away. He pauses for a moment and turns around to move back.
All right. The things to actually pay attention to, for one thing, is who they're loaning Jake's money to. They've told him they're going to bleed him dry, which Jake hates. That is going against everything that he is. They're showing him who's getting the money. And for all intents and purposes, it doesn't look like anyone they hand these bags of money, particularly an old lady that's yet to come, that they have the ability to pay it back. Now, there's a few things going on. The paramount, valuable, most valuable thing in this storyline is what they're trying to give to Jake. The money is of no value. They throw it away. There's even a scene where they walk through a casino and touch all the slot machines. which start paying back, and they don't even care. They walk right by it, and it's making a point. The money is shown for a few reasons. $12 bills don't exist, and they make a point to show the $12 bill. First off, Avi says money seems to be king. He doesn't say it is king because it's not king compared to what they are involved in. They could get it any day of the week as much as they wanted or didn't want. He did not say money is king because the reality is it's worthless and of little concern compared to what they're trying to teach Jake. The 12 also references the zodiac in an offhand way and the energies. And you can know this because the whole Kabbalic thing is about energies. And also, of course, 12 reduces to 3, so we're back to 333. There's another thing that I could have broken down, but I'm just not going to spend my time. The key fob Jason mentioned shows a checkmate. So the little 4x4 square shows the white pawn and rook checkmating a black king with a black pawn. Almost certainly there is some message buried in there. I just don't care, but it's there. Lastly, another proof that this is all tied to Kabbalah is Horowitz himself, because there was a chess master named Israel Albert Horowitz, and I'm reasonably sure that's who was being referenced there.
Back in the car again, it is not raining, and Jake is sitting in the back seat, with Zach driving this time, and Avi in the front seat. Avi tells Jake that they need to know his history with Macca, all of his history. Jake tells them about the three Eddies who had gambling games going on all over the city. He says that while it was wild and dangerous, it did pay well if you won. Macca had lost his card man and knew that since that Jake could play well, he wanted him to take his place. Jake, however, refused to do so, saying that they then started to lean on his brother and his family. To keep the peace, Jake played the card game. During the game, one of the players insults Jake, so he pulls his gun underneath the table and shoots the man in the foot. Things erupt into chaos, the money had disappeared, and 2 weeks later, Jake is being questioned by the police. The Eddies think that Jake might talk, so they go and threaten his niece. The mother gets very upset and ends up getting shot. This incident is how Jake ended up in prison for 7 years, but he did not give up the information that it was Macca that had arranged the games. The Eddies somehow had upset Macca and ended up mixed in concrete in one of his buildings.
So here's the convoluted backstory of why everything came to be. But to me, the main point here is what starts everything for this storyline to even exist is Jake's ego. During the game, one of the players insults Jake, and that led to the prison and everything else that followed. Are you following how critically important this is? This is the reason for the entirety of the movie. This is the reason Jake is still in prison. This is the reason that every other person in this film, except Avi and Zach and possibly Doreen, are in prison because of their egos, aka the other, aka the devil. Go ahead, Jace.
We are now in the office of some Asian men, one of whom is asking for 3 more days to make their payment. They are allowed the 3 days, but are informed that they most certainly will make their payment. Cut to a cheap motel with Zach giving Jake a room key. Zach tells Jake that he will be hearing from them. Cut to Macca in Black Tie Affair, with Paul coming to tell him that they can't see Mr. Gold. Apparently, no one sees Mr. Gold, but they will be meeting with one of his representatives. An older woman in a black suit comes out, surrounded by several other women, also in black suits. Her name is Lily Walker. One of the assistants speaks into her ear. She checks her watch, and then the same assistant waves to Macca to approach and speak. Macca twice attempts to shake her hand after Lily says that they had never met before, but she ignores his hand and asks to walk. She says that she wants to explain to him the gravity of the endeavor he has undertaken. He says that he does, and that he will get the powder by Friday. Lily tells him that that is good, as Mr. Gold has put faith in him and that he has people to please. Lily then tells him that they have heard that he might be having some problems, which Macca denies. Lily says that they do not like publicity. Lily then approaches a line of attractive women, looking them over, then stops in front of one who is wearing a large black bow tie with white polka dots. Lily starts grappling at her face, which the woman allows at first, but then starts to pull back a bit. Lily pulls her hand away, and Macca is shown looking on in confusion. Lily then turns to Macca and asks if they are clear. Lily says then, "Mr. Gold does not give more time or second chances." Lily then tells Macca that there is no shortage of people who wish to do business with Mr. Gold. She says good day and walks away. The entire room then follows Lily, leaving Macca alone, still looking confused. He turns around and leaves in the other direction.
He's not the only one confused. Everyone watching this film is confused. Of all this grand scene and the grand building they're in, there's one main point that matters. Paul comes up to Macca and says, "You can't see Mr. Gold." He also tells him, "No one sees Mr. Gold." You know why? Because no one can see Mr. Gold. It's not possible. A lot of people get tied up with who Lily Walker is. Maybe she's the person who plays Gold's game the best. Maybe she's a figment in a dream. It just doesn't matter. She's playing the role of putting pressure on in lieu of Mr. Gold. But it should not be forgotten that this is a true statement, a very true statement that Paul tells Macca. Nobody sees Mr. Gold, and I am telling you, nobody can possibly see Mr. Gold. It can't be done.
Back at the pool, Jake is handing two bags to Zach and Avi. Jake says that here is their money, and what now? Avi tells Jake to take a seat, then asks him how much time he did and who he did it with. Jake asks why, but Zach says that they asked the questions. There is a chessboard on the table between Jake and Avi moves a piece from his side, a white pawn. Jake tells them he had two choices in prison, 14 years of normal time or 7 years of solitary. He chose the solitary. Jake then engages in the chess game after Avi stares at him for a few moments. Jake moves a black pawn. Jake explains that he spent 20 hours a day locked up in between two salty convicts who had been there for more years than he cares to remember. One was a chess master, the other a master con man. They had never seen or spoken to each other, but they may as well have been married since they knew so much about each other. Once a day, twin brothers who were jailed for murder pushed the library cart to their cells. They had been doing this for 22 years. They used to write down chess moves and concepts of the con on the back pages of the books based on subjects like theoretical astrophysics and the mathematics of quantum mechanics. Jake says that they just used them for the con. Jake then says that he intercepted their books because he was sandwiched between their cells. Jake says that chess and cons is a dangerous combination. He says that they were locked up on their own for 10 years with no distractions, with nothing to do except how to steal one another's pieces. As Jake is speaking, their chess game continues. Jake admits that he thought that he was clever, but that these two were of another class. Jake says that their sole ambition was to create the ultimate con and win the ultimate game. Eventually, they seemed to come up with a formula for the con. The agreed-upon plan was that they were all going to go together. The next day, they were gone without explanation, like they just evaporated. Jake has been putting Avi in check while they have been speaking. 2 years after their disappearance, he was also free, but the other two knew everything about him because Jake had told them. They had cleaned him out entirely and left only a note that read, "You can only get smarter by playing a smarter opponent." But he had their formula for the con, and it worked. Avi says that it isn't doing him much good now, but then Jake checkmates him. Zach says that Jake needs to get moving and to give him the addresses.
So Jake, still asleep, along with every other character, can't put together what is becoming glaringly obvious. Zach and Avi are the two men that were in prison with Jake, and they promised to take him with him, but Jake is asleep and confused about a couple of things. First of all, he still thinks Zach and Avi left him behind. They did not. That's them. They've come to get him. They're going to try to actually teach them the greatest con ever pulled off. Jake thinks he's already got that because he learned this trick that they worked out. That's how he won the money from Maka. That's how, you know, he got everything he has because he knows this con, which is infallible. And he thinks that is the big, big game. It is not. He's still asleep. He can't see it. Now, he chose solitary confinement. And so it's a little bit like the example I always use with the song in your head, right? Haven't heard this song for, I don't know, 15, 20 years, yet it's playing in your head. You didn't turn it on. I can't figure out how to turn it off. Have you had this happen? Are you hearing a song in your head that you haven't heard for Lord knows how long, and you don't have the power to turn it off? Who put it there? Well, here's the example. He chose solitary confinement, and now the other, the ego, the devil, is constantly making him afraid of tight spaces based on this thing he went through. Now, the other thing that's being dropped here is the master builder number of 22. It's done at least twice, and it's in reference to the prison. But it's not just the brick and mortar prison. It's the prison we're all in. All of us, except Zach and Avi, and possibly Doreen. And the twins, of course, there's probably meaning. Are they referencing Gemini? I don't know. I don't care. But the 22 master builder number is dropped in there. At the end of the day, had Zach not been, Jake not been dead asleep, he should be coming to the realization that these two guys that he thinks are conning him are the guys he was sandwiched in between in prison, the master chess player and the master con man.
The twins could be a reference to the twin pillars of Freemasonry because they're dispensing the knowledge or the enlightenment.
Ding, 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 ding. They're going to have meaning, absolutely.
Jake is confused as to why Zach and Avi are dragging things out, causing him pain. Jake is doing the rounds of the loan sharking business. Then he is playing Avi at chess again and beats him again. Cut to Jake at an elderly woman's home, there to collect what she owes, which she doesn't have. He is told to come back. Jake meets them at a wall of a building where Zach and Avi are rigging chains to pull it down. He didn't collect anything from his last two rounds, which were the elderly lady and Horowitz. Zach tells him either they pay or he pays. Avi tells him that he needs to get with it. They take the keys to his car. He gets in their truck and he is told to hold on tight. They rip down the wall. It was one of Macca's places. They broke in and stole a very secure safe. Cut between them drilling open the safe and Jake winning another chess game. Macca doesn't understand why they took that safe, as they haven't even been using it. But this time, it was in use. Sam Gold's cocaine was being stored in there. Macca is, of course, quite upset. He screams at Paul to fix the situation by getting more cocaine. Paul tells him that the only person who has the quantity that they need is Lord John. Macca says no way, that he is not nourishing the competition, but it appears that he has no choice.
So again, everyone's ego is leading up to what's happening, what's about to happen, and the last outcome. And yet, Zach and Avi are causing it all. It's almost, well, it's not almost like, it is exactly like that Avi and Zach are free of Mr. Gold, and so they have the ability to play everybody because they can now fill the role of Mr. Gold. But notice that Jake's money is always, every time, given to someone who clearly isn't going to have the ability to pay it back, which kind of shows the non-value. It also shows the agony it must be putting Jake in, knowing that this is about to evaporate. And each time he plays Avi, he kicks his butt, and he's still in the dream state. He can't possibly put together that the rules he keeps telling Avi about feeding them pieces and not being the and all these things, he is exactly that, because Avi, it like Mr. Gold, is playing him for a fool. He's purposefully making Jake win while not letting Jake know that he's being allowed to win, which is the reverse of feeding someone pieces as you kick their butt. Jake still needs to wake up.
Paul is negotiating with Lord John and his men, offering twice the market price for the desired cocaine. Lord John and his men are eating and speaking amongst themselves in their native Asian language. Paul is told that they can't help. Paul still wants to negotiate. Back at Macca's UV room, Macca tells Paul to get the cocaine at what is assumedly an extraordinary price. Macca is upset that he has chained himself to Mr. Gold, who he calls Mr. Black Magic and Mr. I Run This Game. Back at Lord John's, the deal is agreed to with his henchmen.
All right. Good description of Mr. Gold coming from Macca. He has chained himself to Mr. Gold, who he calls Mr. Black Magic, Mr. I Run This Game. Let me put an addendum. Mr. I Run This Game, unless Avi and Zach are there. Then Gold has no power whatsoever. Avi and Zach have the power. A lot of people spend times associating the characters with what chess piece they are. So let's cut to the chase. Most of the time they're going to say Macca's the black king, Jake's the white king, and the kings can't be killed. So later on when there's guns pointed, that's why no one dies. All this really doesn't matter. As is true of every modern film, they pre-announce realities that are going to happen. This is 2005. 9/11, 2005, or maybe it was Pearl Harbor Day in 2007, they are pre-announcing the rise of Chinese into our gangster and into our genres and into our lives, which back then is still seems far away. No one's even thinking about. The other thing is, later on, they're going to show you a paper where a hospital is panicking because there's a vaccine shortage. This is 2005 that they're doing this. So do not be fooled. This is what media does. And whether you take the time to pay attention to the little tidbits or not, your subconscious is picking it up. Since this is the last bullet point for hour one, I'm going to cut to the chase. Mr. Gold is your ego. That's how it's one way we could say it. I refer to Mr. Gold as the other. It is the reason the music is playing in my head. It is the reason that I can't figure out a way to turn it off. Until I pay attention, because now I can turn off the music. But there was a time when I couldn't. There was a time when I didn't even realize that the music playing in my head was a big deal. There was a time when I thought, how come I can't control this? And then there was a time when I had figured out what to do, stuck with it, and I could turn the music off in my head. Mr. Gold is also the devil. Mr. Gold is, in fact, the cause for all the pain that has ever been in the world. It is a bit ironic that you want to call this a B movie or whatever, such a lofty, critically important idea is being played off in a movie like this, but isn't that the way it's done? This movie was released, panned, had terrible, terrible reviews. It was recut to supposedly make it less confusing when in fact it was made more confusing. And then the release date of 9/11 went away and they went back to the predecessor of 9/11, Pearl Harbor Day, a day that will live in infamy. Do you get the circle, the connections, the ties of this frickin' realm we live in currently? A world where Pearl Harbor can happen on a world stage, a world at war, and at the time, nobody realizes it's a put-up. We're still living in that world. How many people recognize the put-up that was the supposed assassination attempt? How many people realize what kind of traction that gave an individual to succeed at what he just supposedly succeeded at? How many sleeping masses still can't possibly put together that your vote did jack, diddly, and squat to put him in office? Because the Electoral College does that. And when the Electoral College does that, that means the system did that. That's what this movie is about. And when a man like that puts on a red hat and takes a supposed lofty position like that, and you are then told he's got both sides of the house, and he's probably got the Supreme Court, you better hope that someone like that doesn't decide to go off the rails. But I'm not here to talk about the mind virus that is Red and Blue. I'm here to pull it back around to the world that allows this to go on. The world that allows this to go on is us. We allow this to go on. We are Jake. We are Sorter. We are Macca. We are everybody sleepwalking through this dream state while the few who are no longer subject to Mr. Gold do whatever the heck they feel like doing. Maybe they're altruistic. Maybe they're not. But that is the message here, and it is a critically important one. Anyhow, Jason, are you ready to wrap up hour one, take a short break, or do you want to add something?
The only thing I'll add is something that should be very obvious, and that's that everything in this movie is allegory for something else.
Yeah. Yes. And again, trying to make it make sense is just going to confuse you more. Just follow the storyline and the information that's put forward. It's really all that's important. And I'm all in that it was intentionally made to be confusing. It was intentionally panned. It was and it's weird for a movie like this that wasn't that popular to be so restricted. Well, region one can get this DVD and region two can get that DVD. And even that premise, how is it that we live in a world where people don't recognize that when DVDs are controlled by region, what they're being used for? This is social engineering. This is Mr. Gold at his finest. But with that, we're going to take a short break. So that was hour one of episode 602. Hour one is free to everybody at crow777radio.com. That is crow777radio.com. Members know to log in because they get access to everything. The forums, the threads, the comments, they can create all of those things and interact. They can stream the two-hour film called Shoot the Moon, which covers all the lunar waves, everything I shot over those years that I was nighttime filming, to include the discovery of the so-called second sun in and around the end of 2014, early 2015, I think. And they get exclusive access to my current solar work, where I am waiting patiently for a clear shot at the second sun, which to my knowledge is residing behind the sun we see almost all the time, as far as I can tell. With that, we're going to take a short break and we're going to come back an hour or two and we're going to finish this because it's critically, critically important idea. And this time it's packaged in a violent, gritty, kind of ugly storyboard, but you could go find this in any spiritual tradition, any. And the wrapper that this version was put in was intentionally confusing. With that, we're going to take a short break, and I'd like to wish you all a happy, healthy, and higher-minded new era. We'll be back shortly. There it is, man. Cheers.
belief is the enemy of knowing. Crow!